The purpose of this show is solely to provide information for you to make your own decisions on the subjects that are presented.
Welcome to the Ben Armstrong Show. I am your host, as always, Ben Armstrong. Are we in a two-tier justice system? Of course, we are. But just how bad is it? You're going to find out. It's not something any of us like. It's not something any of us really want to actually have to deal with, but we do because it's where we are, and it's worse. It's worse than we ever thought it could be. Darren Beatty was on with Jack Posobiec, and they had a fantastic conversation dealing with all of this. And I want to bring you as much as I can because I think they hit the nail on the head of what we're facing in this day and age. So I don't want to waste any time because I want to get as much in as possible. So here they are. Take a listen.
Darren, what is it about the right that they just can't seem to get it?
Well, that's a huge and extremely important question. I'll be honest with you, Jack. I heard you before the break mention Smash Mouth, and I couldn't help but think of the song about not the sharpest tool in the shed and the shape of an L on the forehead. That's the question. So why do conservatives, why does the right keep having the shape of an L on the forehead? Why are we such losers when it comes to the real cultural battles, especially when you compare it with the fact that we've actually won in the more narrow political electoral sense, fairly often. But that doesn't translate into any meaningful, enduring cultural victories, or really victories in the realm of institutional power and the capability and the will to exercise that power. So there are a lot of dimensions to that, and it cashes out in a very practical and visceral way. It's not a theoretical question. It's the question of why is Peter Navarro in jail and Mayorkas isn't, and Hillary isn't, and Hunter isn't?
Yes, these are massive, massive questions that have to be answered. And, well, obviously, because we don't have a two-tier justice system on our side. We wouldn't hold people accountable illegally the way they do. Oh, I mean, we've got corrupt Republicans. I'll say that. But, well, there's a whole bunch you could explain as to why, but we're living in an era in which good is facing evil and evil is winning easily right now. Let's go back to their conversation. There's a lot that they hit on.
Pick your criminal scumbag. David Brock isn't. That's the question. That gives you people a sense of what's at stake. Not that, you know, we should necessarily be frothing at the mouth to throw other people in prison, but how about just at least not have them throw our people in prison? And there's an amazing chilling effect because basically anybody recognizably and conspicuously in the fight. No, I hope it's not the case, probably won't be, but anybody who's conspicuously in the fight might actually go to prison for something completely stupid and contrived and politically motivated.
Because the left has no moral standard when it comes to this. When they want their way, they have decided we don't care anymore about the rule of law. I've said that if you live in New York, once liberals realize that they're in full control and they're not having to be accountable, they can basically do whatever they want. You're in big time trouble. You have a two-tier justice system, which means you have no country. If one side can do whatever it wants and get away with it, and the other side not only doesn't even do crimes, but gets brought up on fake crimes. And that's where we are. fake crimes. You have no country. You can't survive that. That is the end of your country. And we're facing that. It's a whole nother problem we're facing on top of all the other problems. More from Darren Beatty.
We have Navarro in there right now. We have the individual we've spoken about before, Doug Mackey, who's facing 7 years for a meme. Can happen to anybody. It certainly could happen to you, Jack. Could even happen to me. You know, if we're recognizably in the fight, it could happen to anybody watching this. So it's, you know, the unfortunate thing, though, is it's such a big problem. And there's so many attractive fake solutions. There are so many attractive, good sounding solutions. There's so many solutions that are kind of maybe even attractive to the donor set because nobody really wants to put all their chips in. And it's, you know, understandable to a degree. You put all your chips in, you could lose everything. But that's really the only way you can take things back in that meaningful and enduring sense. And unfortunately, as I said, there's no easy answer. It's not a matter of simply winning an election. It's, yes, winning an election, but using an election in the right way, undergoing the laborious and difficult process of shaping the institutions, staffing the bureaucracies. Now, I was just having this conversation earlier today about Bill Barr. Yeah, you know, Barr did some good things. And, you know, at one point, he even called out the manifest ridiculousness of our mail-in ballot system, just basically inviting massive fraud. He, of course, changed his tune. Trump said it correctly. Trump actually, I think, has mostly been too nice, Barr, but he's come around to stating the obvious, which is that Barr is a coward. But it's not enough to identify that Barr was a coward. Because to say that he was a coward correctly is to presuppose in some way, or at least to imply, that if he hadn't been a coward, he could have gotten the DOJ in line. But the unfortunate reality is that's not the case.
Yes, I think he's right on that. Even though Bill Barr should have, I'm not sure the bureaucracy, I couldn't say that word, would go along regardless, because it is the deep state is so entrenched and they have been living beyond the law, beyond accountability for so long. It's clear that the deep state has lived lawlessly to the point where they have no problem putting innocent people in jail. And it's frustrating. It's frustrating because, like I said before, the bottom line is, without the rule of law, you have no country. This can't last very long. It's not, you think it can last because we've lived in America so long that it's hard to picture America collapsing, but just this issue alone shows that you can't last very long before it all collapses more.
Even if he hadn't been a coward, the DOJ, simply due to negative inertia of a bureaucracy like that, probably wouldn't have fallen in line to his command in the same way that the executive branch didn't fall in line under Trump's command. And Trump was certainly no coward. So there's basically two layers to it. We need to keep our people on board. We need to give them software updates and the will and the courage to do what needs to be done. But that's not enough on the bureaucratic level. There's the other side has this vast and extremely capable lawfare architecture and national security architecture. And those don't happen overnight. You know, you've had great discussions with Mike Benz about different centers of political power, you know, the Cowboys and the Yankees and so forth. Those real pillars of power are not created overnight. So that's part of the reason why it's not an easy answer, is that everyone wants to hear, oh, we win an election, we put the real killers in, and then it turns around. But unfortunately, it's a long process, and we don't really have the time. So that's the unsatisfying answer that is the true answer.
And really what you do get, I think, is you get it on the ground floor, basically. So Trump becomes president, and let's just sort of say, what does this mean for the election? So Trump becomes president, and then what? And you see, of course, you know, the Democrats are trying to make this Project 2025 and some of these other various groups, Center for American Renewal, these into the, you know, boogeymen and zombie stalking horses of the left. But what it really is just an attempt to say, number one, you go into these bureaucracies, you start firing people just left and right, absolute left and right. And you scare enough. So, and I'll say this as a guy who has been in the federal civil service, that as an intelligence officer, that you need to set up a new incentive structure whereby in the way to get ahead in the bureaucracy is competence. The current way to get ahead in the bureaucracy and really any institution in America today is loyalty to the party. And
what a brilliant point. That he sums it up there, where what really has happened, and they've ensured in the deep state to hire this way. How loyal are you to the party? They don't care about your competency. They want to see if you will do what it takes to be completely loyal to the party so that they can do what they want to do and basically throw out all your morality. He goes on a lot more. Take a listen.
And this is actually something that is endemic and key to the cultural Marxists, because they specifically go for people who don't have any other skills and don't have any other talents and don't have the ability to make anything of themselves. But what could they possibly have? They have loyalty, and they know, the party knows, and when I say party here, I mean more than just, you know, sort of the official Democrat Party. I'm speaking of sort of the cultural Marxist agenda, if you will, the cabal, that the regime, that they know the people who will be the most loyal are the people who have nothing else if they are not empowered by the regime. These are the people who will become the most strident and loyal petty soldiers and petty tyrants of the regime, because they know if the regime falls, they've got nowhere else to go.
You know, that's an excellent point. And actually, I've had a similar discussion oriented toward the somewhat, the kind of, in one sense, unusual prominence that the transsexuals have enjoyed in what I call the globalist American empire. Why transsexuals? We did one of our, I think, most insightful pieces at Revolver explored this in the context of one of the historical antecedents, which is the Janissaries of the Ottoman Empire. And we explore some interesting parallels there. But for the purposes here, it suffice to say that there is no creature more vulnerable than the transsexual, and therefore more dependent on the regime. There's typically no family formation and estrangement from the existing family. They're a kind of bizarre expression of humanity, to put it in a way, and in any other context would be extremely vulnerable. Therefore, they owe everything to the regime. They're completely dependent on the regime.
They are completely loyal because they're dependent. We have a quick break. Darren, you and I think we're right on the same wavelength.
Yeah, I agree with them that dependency is key. So you hire people that are loyal and completely dependent, and you can have the vast corruption that you have. I mean, you're kind of getting deep into the woods, but I think this kind of stuff needs to be explained. Anyways, they go back and they continue the discussion later on in another segment, and I want to give you some of that discussion as well. So let's go right back to it. Take a listen.
Darren Beatty, you were just going through and talking about how there are certain groups that are favored by the regime, and specifically because they are dependent on the regime. You mentioned specifically how this is where the transgender movement comes from, and I completely agree. We also saw this, by the way, the Bolsheviks used a similar system. It wasn't transgender, but it was, they would take all the sort of conquered imperial peoples from around the empire. They would take the Georgians and the Central Asians and the Tatars and the Cossacks, and Stalin, of course, was Georgian, and they would say, come join us, we'll get rid of those Russians, we'll get rid of those it's almost like systemic racism, right? Russian privilege, a Slavic privilege, I guess, throughout the empire. We'll take them down and we'll replace them in systems of power, the dekulakization. It's actually very similar, but what I think is amazing is that there's so many people who, on the right, they either willfully don't see it happening right before their eyes, or they see it and they don't really know how to respond. They don't really know what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, I think partly the reason for that is that there are no really, I mean, yes, there are striking parallels with Bolsheviks and others, but in another case, it's the disconnects that make it so difficult for people to fully appreciate what type of authoritarian system we're in. They're looking for these overt kind of Soviet signs when really the more subtle mechanisms have already taken root so deeply. And the other side of that is there is still, at least for now, a certain degree of material prosperity in the United States. And so there's this weird cultural condition, this weird combination of relative material prosperity, but also kind of cultural chaos and anxiety.
Yeah, that is another brilliant point, excuse me. That is another brilliant point, that you have a society that is still having success economically and has not seen bad results yet. And so you haven't ever had a culture like America where we're based on the dollar system so that we can withstand so much more. But at some point, this will collapse. But because it hasn't collapsed, and because you're seeing people are still prosperous, they can't grasp just how bad it really is. It's a really, really weird, unique situation. I think most of you who are listening to me grasp all this, but I'm telling you, there's a ton of people who don't. And I think that's why I wanted to give you as much as I can, because I think this is very important stuff. It goes deep, but it's important to really analyze what's going on. A little bit more, and then we'll finish up.
That I think people just find extremely paralyzing and very difficult to mobilize in that kind of context, and prevents any kind of organizational response that you might expect given certain kind of objective signifiers of where everything is going with how corrupt and vindictive the regime has been politically.
Well, and this is something that we're going to have Joshua Lysak on here in a minute, my co-author on this piece, but we go through this in depth, where we outline this is the classic Marxist playbook, but it's not just destroying and changing the language, it's also playing with your own values against you, turning your own values against you. So they'll always claim it's about equality of some sort, it's always about granting more rights, it's all about equal treatment, etc. And suddenly, if you're not for those, as an example, I remember throughout the government, they would say that it's political for you to have a Trump or even a Biden, bumper sticker, let's say, up at your office. But if you were to put up a BLM flag, Well, that's not political at all, because that's just representing a community. If you're putting up a trans flag, that's just representing a community. That's not a political movement, even though they are the most powerful political movements in America. And if you say anything against them, now suddenly you're anti-black, you're a racist, you're anti-trans. If you're against Antifa, you must be a fascist. If you think that George Floyd died of a fentanyl overdose, you know, you're banished from the internet, et cetera, et cetera. We all know about this. And so this is how, and you know, don't even get me started on the, you know, questioning about the role of women, or if you say anything, you're a misogynist. So the idea is they take these quote unquote reform positions, and then use it against people who are like your sort of old school, old right, blue pilled conservatives, saying, whoa, I'm all for equal rights. I'm all for equality. I think those things are great. I think you guys are just going a bit too far. And this is why you.
All right. I have to stop it there. But an overall point you could make is that they are not going to relent, and they're not going to stop. And when you combine that, we're fighting, these are the people within our country. Understand that. We're fighting a bunch of enemies outside of our country that want to destroy us. Yet at the same time, we have to fight these people, the deep state, who are destroying us from within, all at the same time. It's a very, very scary situation. So what I suggest for you to do, get right with God. That's what I don't think you have enough time to waste. Jesus is the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father except through him. I love you guys. See ya.
Hey guys, don't forget to subscribe to my dad's channel. It's free, and you stay informed. Now that's a win-win. See ya!
Sophia paused before the door. It read, Department of Bi-Digital Convergence. Just inside was a new world, a better world, the one of everlasting life, of no pain, of no loss, of no problem. She entered the chamber, and her surroundings changed. She saw around her an infinite field of waving golden grain surmounted by cloudless blue sky. The AI voice whispered gently in her mind, Welcome to the Singularity. She couldn't see it and couldn't feel it, but her body had almost instantly been covered by a swarm of tiny gray multi-legged bots that melted through her clothes and into her skin. Not perceiving the nightmare, her eyes had already been consumed and the rest of her body was dissolving as the bots digested her flesh. She felt only a warmth suffusing her being. Drowsy, she drifted to sleep, and her last thought was one of panic. Would she ever wake? Could a nightmare vision like this be an outcome of the much-hyped transhumanist technological singularity? Enter the world of the future as illuminated by the experience of the past in Endgame, the new book by Dennis Barrett, the publisher of The New American Magazine, and find out how the disastrous COVID pandemic response fits with the technocratic elite's thirst to create a transhumanist utopia. Get Endgame from shopjbs.org with free shipping with code ENDSHIP, ENDSHIP. Or get Endgame and the Great Reset Collector's Issue of The New American Magazine and get free shipping plus an additional 20% off both with code N20, END20.